All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Thursday, June 22nd. That is
James Davis.
And I'm Doug Norrie from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Still time to grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, DFSR.com/MLB, optimal lineups for FanDuel and or DraftKings. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, you're all set to go. Buddy, first baseball game for my kid last night, and what a game it was. Phillies, Cardinals, Waka Pivetta. If you can't start your kid off with a better pitching matchup than that, like you're fighting Phils, the Cardinals. I mean, if there's not a fan for life growing up in this family, I simply don't know what I could have done to make this situation any better.
You think your daughter's going to be a Phillies fan?
I know what she was really pumped about was that we just randomly ran super, super hot that last night was Star Wars night at the stadium.
So
I just felt like, I just was like drawing twos against aces and just like went flop, turn, river and just like spiked the two right at the end.
Look at you with your poker reference. Who knew?
I was like, oh my God, we got Star Wars night. Although it was nice because I did actually get blamed for not knowing it was Star Wars night going in because she could have, quote, worn a couple of the different outfits that she has or brought her lightsaber. So felt like it was lucky to have had it happen. Unlucky that I'm
kind of the worst dad in the world.
Yeah, I was going to say not the all-time worst dad in the world, but definitely like top 10 worst for simply just not knowing it was Star Wars night at the stadium. We made it through 5 innings. All in all, a good I thought pretty nice experience. She seemed happy about it. I doubt she ever watches another baseball game in her life, but yeah, say lovey. Even I was like, you know, it's fifth inning. Let's head out of here. Phillies are going to win. And they ended up losing, but I was like, yeah, they'll probably win. Who cares? All right. We have a double slate of Thursday baseball going down here. Pretty interesting, all things considered, just because we get a nice sort of mix-up of pitching on both slates and then some teams in some pretty good spots that I think we can target. The early slate, a little bit bigger of an early slate than usual. We have 6 games going here, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern. So here, well, we have the Coors. We have Coors on the slate here, which we can get to a little bit when we talk about the bats. But for pitching, again, you really don't have to pay a ton. I mean, Carlos Martinez is only 10-4. Do you see him as kind of the clear-cut guy that you need to target here, at least for cash games early?
I would think so. I mean, you know, he's a guy that kind of comes up, and he's always around the periphery of who we want to start, even when it's a bigger slate. And so on a half slate, basically, in a solid matchup here, it's kind of tough to imagine him not being out there, especially compared to some of the other options, which we'll get to in a second. But yeah, I mean, solid peripherals this season. The ground ball rate's still pretty decent. The K rate's up to 10/9. The walks have come down just a little bit, and the xFIP's in the low 3s. So not really a whole lot to complain about with him. And, you know, just going up against the Phillies is a great spot for an opposing starting pitcher, unless your name is Michael Wacup. So love that spot a lot. I mean, the Phillies, yeah, like even with last night's game where they beat up Waka, bottom 3 in the league in terms of WOBA against righties, top 5 team in terms of strikeouts. So, yeah, just a situation like you read about on a small slate.
Yeah, he doesn't get the money line. You probably wish the money line was more like 170-ish. It's more like 140, minus 140. So I don't know if that's just kind of Nola coming in the other side. Nola hasn't been all that bad. So that could be kind of what's influencing it. The Cardinals' bottom of their order is pretty rough too. So it's not like they're getting a ton of firepower to be able to kind of just drive the win up. But Phillies, less than 4 implied runs coming in here. I do think that the 10-4 price tag on Martinez probably gets him home on FanDuel. I believe it's a little bit of a different situation here on DraftKings. Yeah, he's 13-5 on DraftKings, right? So that is a lot. And DraftKings has been doing this more lately where they're whatever pricing that they're doing, which is identifying, like especially when there's a clear-cut guy, like this happened like this with Scherzer yesterday, but where there's a clear-cut kind of ace guy, the pricing on that guy goes through absolutely through the roof. At 13-5, I don't know. That's pushing. I think you can maybe fade him on DraftKings. Like he's a good pitcher, but is he really worth is he worth that percentage of your salary cap? Which I just was going to try to do in my head there real quick, and I just couldn't do it. But do you think he's worth it here?
Well, not usually. I mean, you asked it. Is he worth that in general? Of course, that's going to be compared to the other options.
27%. Sorry.
27%. If there's only 2 pitchers pitching on a slate, then yeah, he's worth it. But the other options, I don't know. They're pretty high risk, high reward from my perspective. So let's dive into who those might be. The 2 ones that I'm looking at most closely for DraftKings that early slate are Jose Quintana and David Paulino. Quintana's kind of funny this season because he's added strikeouts at the expense of some of his control. But he's also been giving up a lot more home runs. And that's really it's been sort of an outlier for him. Like, he's always been good at suppressing the home run ball. Actually, Jeff Sullivan wrote a great article about this over at Fangraphs, why things have kind of gone the other way for him. I'm sorry, it's Craig Edwards actually wrote that article. But and, you know, like a lot of pitchers we've talked about, it's because Quintana's been changing up his repertoire a little bit, and it's really hasn't been kind to him whatsoever. Like, he's always been a guy that's been able to outperform his xFIP by, you know, kind of outperforming on his home run to fly ball ratio. And then this season it's gone in the opposite direction, where he's been kind of below league average. All that being said, the other peripherals are still pretty decent here. You know, like, and again, we're got to compare apples to apples. This is a really tiny slate where we don't have a ton of options. So, you know, you've got to kind of bear with me here. But when you're comparing it apples to apples with some of these other guys, Quintana's just pretty affordable. And he's got effectively a league average matchup with the Twins. And at 8,000, he allows you to pay up for bats elsewhere. So, you know, he might wind up being one of those guys, like a classic DraftKings starting pitcher two type of guy, where you plug him in and kind of hope for the best, except he might be headlining for you.
Right, and that's
not a super spot to be.
That's the issue, because you're just paying so much more. Like, if you look at the salary, so you get Carlos Martinez at 13.5. The next most expensive guy in DraftKings is $4,000 less than Chase Anderson at 9.4, right? That's about as big of a spread as you'll ever see between start SP1 and SP2, just in terms of price. And I think that this is probably the hand you're going to be dealt with on the early slate, where you're just going to have to kind of grin and bear it. I'm facing, or just kind of throwing out some of these other less than exciting arms, because I'm pretty positive at this point. Our system is just not going to get all the way up to Martinez. I just don't think his money line is high enough. Like, the win expectation, even though it's not even worth as much on DraftKings, is just not there. The implied runs for the Phillies are just a little too high for the price. So you really kind of, to be 13.5, you kind of need to be Kershaw, Scherzer, or Sale. Like, that's really the category of guy that you need to be. And Martinez is just not that guy. So I think I'd probably be pretty comfortable fading it. This is why I like playing both sites too, because I think you can take advantage of pricing inefficiencies going both ways here. And strikes me as a good situation to have shares of him on. I hate when people say shares of stuff. It's like, sounds like, for some reason, it's like a trigger word for
what
me.
What the hell did you say?
I said shares of him, like you're stock trading. And I said it, and I instantly regretted it, because when I hear other people say it, it's just like such a trigger for me, because it sounds so douchey.
It's
but
a little,
like
a little cringeworthy for sure.
No, I'm admitting that I did a bad job. But anyway,
sure.
I think that playing him on FanDuel, I think, and not playing him on DraftKings seems like the order. You mentioned Paulino too. Make the case for me for Paulino. I'm not sure I totally see it.
You don't see it? Okay. Well, let me open your eyes, Doug, to the story that is David Paulino. So David Paulino is a really weird pitcher. He came up with the Tigers so first of all, he's only 23 years old, so he's very young. He was drafted by the Tigers in 2011. And since then, he hasn't pitched more than 100 innings in a given season at any stage. So he's kind of bounced through the minors. He's actually kind of rocketed up through the minors after an extended stint with the Tigers in rookie ball. And he's always had phenomenal peripherals. Like, if you go back and look at this guy, he's generating a ton of ground balls at some stops, although that's declined as he's sort of matured as a pitcher. But double-digit K rates, walk rates, you know, 2 and under, 3 and under, that kind of thing. But just not pitching that many innings. So it's really tough to sort of figure out what to make of him. And then this season, he's repeated that track record. You know, he's come up to the majors as a 23-year-old, 9 Ks per 9, 2.2 walks per 9. Those are excellent numbers. The issue with him has been the ground ball rate. 31% ground ball percentage, you know, if he were a qualified pitcher, would be about the lowest in the whole majors. And that's problematic when you're pitching in Houston, which tends to, you know, yield a lot of home runs. And he's also had a really bad BABIP. You know, the 327 BABIP looks to be unsustainable based on his minor league track record. You know, those sort of things tend to track pretty decently. He was a sub-300 BABIP guy in the minors and hasn't been so far up in the majors. But, I think if he can control the BABIP, bring that down 30 points, maybe run a little bit better in terms of home run to fly ball ratio, although the long ball probably just will be a problem for him with his profile, I think he's actually just a good pitcher. You know, I think he's not one of these just random, you know, just Tom, Dick, and Harry's that come up, Sam Giglio's of the world, Zach, you know, let's see some other guys going today. It's the Jesse Hahn, you know, Wade Miley. Like, there's a lot of just kind of randoms pitching today. He's not one of those. I think he does have a future. Nick Turley, you know. And he's super cheap is the other thing. Like, if you play him, you can basically start getting bats from that Coors game. And I have to think that going from Houston to Oakland is a step in the right direction for him too. So you know, that's kind of the big picture case there. It doesn't feel awesome. Like, I wouldn't be slamming him home on a full slate, but at 6,300, when the alternatives are some of these other guys that just have known obvious problems, I think taking a risk on him is pretty reasonable.
Yeah, getting a strikeout per nine, excuse me, a strikeout per inning kind of guy at 6,300 is, you do have to view that as a win.
That's what I'm saying, man. Come on.
The issue with him so far this year has just been the length of games, right? And it's actually, a lot of it also stems from pitch count. The guy has not pitched more than 90 pitches in a game yet this season. So he's been 81, 77, 89, 89. So that strikes me as 90 pitches is probably the limit. And the reason he probably went, without going back and looking exactly at the game log, my guess would be the two games where he pitched well under, it was probably because he was like in some kind of jam and pushing up against that 90. And that was, or like, I don't know, maybe it was a National League Park and they won the pitch hit. Like, something else came up. Because it looks to me like 90 pitches is the limit. If that's the case with him, then you really kind of, you do need to run a little bit hot on just not getting into too many problems, not really walking anybody. Luckily, his control is pretty good. And I think he probably pretty much talked me into it. Like, the other guy in that kind of category, in that range of him, with a guy with like decent peripherals for cheap, Aaron Nola's in there. And now he's an underdog here, obviously. So you don't love that against the Cardinals, but he also is like, you know, 8.3 Ks per nine, walks under three, decent xFIP. Again, like, what's driving his problem is more that he's just like not a favorite to win the game, and that's probably, you know, kind of shaving off a few expectation points. I kind of put Nola and Paulino sort of in and around the same category, and I'd be fine just taking the savings on Paulino, I think.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They're very, very similar. I think Nola, you know, a little bit more of a track record there. Nola was, of course, really good last season. I think he was kind of underrated because he had the high ERA, but low threes xFIP. Like, Nola had a really, really solid performance on the back of a really nice ground ball rate. He got beat up on the BABIP, and that is kind of looking like, you know, it's interesting with BABIP because I think this is something that people talk about generally as something that's strictly up to luck, but different pitchers just generate their own sort of baseline batting average on balls in play allowed. And Nola's climbed last season, but so did his ground ball rate. And, you know, students of the game will understand that ground balls tend to turn into hits more often than fly balls do. It's just that fly balls turn into extra base hits and home runs more than ground balls do. And so Nola's climb in BABIP kind of comes as no surprise. And the fact that he's maintained that this season leads me to believe that it's a little bit more than run bad, that he's kind of in that, you know, 320s BABIP range. So
right, I do like... He's 240 innings of the ERA a run higher than the xFIP, right? Like, so 240 innings, there's still time to regress that back to something.
Sure. Yeah.
But that's still a lot. Like, 240 innings is like getting into the, I'm maybe starting to believe that this is maybe what his reality is.
It's worth keeping an eye on, right? I mean, xFIP is not a perfect tool for projecting future performance. And Nola's a guy with a checkered past. Like, he's not a guy that's always been a dominant pitcher. He came up and was pretty underwhelming in his first few stints in the minors. And while he's 24, he's still nice and young. He's you know, more of a known commodity than many 24-year-olds. Anyway, I wouldn't mind playing Nola. Like, all of this to kind of circle back around, I think he's a pretty reasonable play. Cardinals effectively a league average matchup here, but just making a case for Paulino to go with it. I suspect Nola will probably be higher owned. So, you know, he's got that going for him.
Checker pass makes it sound like he like his ground ball rate is climbing, and he robbed a liquor store. You know, like, he's just like, he's been.
He's got a B and E on his record, and, you know,
the BABIP's kind of high, and he went on joyriding in a car he stole, you know, like, so it's just like the pass is kind of checkered for him.
Just the friends for him. Yeah. Well, and the other guy I want to throw out there too that I think is going to see some ownership is Chase Anderson. I do think he's probably just a little expensive for most people's blood, but, you know, another guy whose ERA has outstripped the xFIP this season, a sub 3 ERA, reasonable K rate. I think some people will talk themselves into it there. For me, it's just a price problem. Like, I don't see him as fundamentally too different than Nola or Paulino, and there's just no way I'm going to pay $3,000 more for him.
Exactly. You get the same kind of K rate and walk rate and xFIP for $3,000 less on both the other guys. So exactly. I think I'm fine just paying down and just taking sort of those same sort of peripherals. And you can don't feel like you need to pick that up right now. On the offense,
hello?
On the
hello,
DFSR.com. So on the offensive side of things, when you get a game like last night, so you get Arizona. I mean, obviously, just goes full ham on the Rockies last night. Put up like 16 runs. Do you think? Yes, yeah, so did I. Do you think a situation like that? And they're, you know, they're fairly popular plays. You know, in cores, I get it. Do you think a performance like that last night will continue to just have their ownership it'll be higher. Like, it could continue to be maybe higher than it should be based on, like, just sort of their implied runs. And is that, like, a good situation to take advantage going the other way? Like, right? Because you're already paying a premium on the Diamondbacks, right? It's not like you're getting, you didn't get 16 runs on the cheap for them last night. Like, you had to pay the absolute max, pretty much. You're going to have to pay for these guys all season. Do you think, with the pitching not being maybe as expensive as it could be, and the fact that they put up the recency thing, do you think that you see them kind of go over-owned here?
Well, it depends. Like, I think on FanDuel, they'll probably be a little bit over-owned for my blood because Martinez is playable. I think on DraftKings, if you don't play Martinez, you actually can get a lot of exposure to the Arizona-Colorado game. And by a lot, I mean, you know, two or three players. You still probably can't go too nuts. Guys like Goldschmidt are 6,000, so it's tough to have too many of those guys. But, yeah, I think the possibility to play them on DraftKings exists. I do think on FanDuel, you're probably better served taking the safety on the pitching thing here. The thing about hitting, especially in great situations, is it always seems safer than it really is when it happens to go off. Like, because you're like, of course they had a great game against Colorado. Like, it was in Coors and blah, blah, blah. Except for it doesn't always work out that way, right? And I think Martinez, we just have that lower standard deviation when it comes to pitchers. And I would err on the side of Martinez, who I think is a clear cut above the other pitching options, rather than going with either Arizona or Colorado, which I do think are clearly above the other hitting options, but not by as large a degree as Martinez is to his peers in the pitching department.
If you go strictly by Vegas implied runs, and I don't suggest people do that, you know, solely, but if you just look at that as just kind of your as a good baseline to start with, the Blue Jays actually have more implied runs than going into this game than the Diamondbacks do. 5 point, or let's just call it a tie. If, depending on how you kind of do that formula, but so let's just say they're both right around 5.6 implied runs. If you, and Blue Jays in a good spot, facing Martin Perez in Texas is supposed to be hot, lefty versus righty. There was word that they're going to switch up their batting lineup today, that they're going to hit Bautista first and Martin second, and then push Donaldson down to third, and then drive Pilar down to the sixth in the order. So that does help. Well, it helps Bautista kind of to move up two spots, in a good spot. Do you see them as just like a pretty easy, not an easy pivot, but a realistic pivot, considering, I don't know, say around the same implied runs, you got a couple of absolute lefty killers in the top of that lineup, and they're just coming, I don't know, 20% cheaper than most of the Diamondbacks.
Oh yeah, I absolutely think so. It's not going to come happily to a lot of people based on what happened last night for us, where we had the one, it's pretty hard to have the 1, 2, and 3 guys in an order for the Blue Jays, including Dwight Smith, who is $2,000. And for them to score 7 runs in the first 3 innings and have legit no piece of it, that was like...
Someone's got to make the odds, man. The game would go forever if they didn't.
You know? Like... Well, that's one of the charming things about baseball, is that you're never out until you're out. But like, I didn't know that it had to be precisely Bautista, Donaldson, and Smith to make all the outs for the team. But
Mister wants the game to go on forever. Someone's got to make the outs, buddy.
I'm with you, man. And I'm also hoping that whoever we choose aren't the people that make the outs tonight, because this really is, or today rather, because this really is a terrific spot. I mean, Martin Perez has just never gotten it together. Like, he was. It's so funny. Baseball is just the weirdest possible sport, where it's like, it's hard to imagine an analog for this. I guess this happens in every sport, but it's so frontlining with baseball, where they're like, Martin Perez coming up, top 5 prospect, actual can't miss guy. Then he comes up and it's like, nah, actually, I'm just going to strike out 4.6 guys per 9 and walk 3.4. I don't know. This is hard. These guys are really good at hitting.
And it happens in the other sports. It just happens like quicker, like just because, like, you know, you draft Anthony Bennett first in the draft.
Or Derek Williams, like, right? No, 100%. Yeah, like, yeah, I guess that's probably it. You don't get these protracted careers. And also, like, in baseball, it's so much easier just to obviously suck, because in basketball, you just don't go on the court, right? Like, if you're Brian Scalabrine, you just, like, sit on the bench and play 2 minutes a game. But, like, if you're a pitcher, Martin Perez just got 200 innings last year of really bad baseball. So it's,
well, that's the problem with baseball. There's just not enough of these guys. Like, that's the obvious thing, because you'll always wonder, like, how do some of these guys have major league gigs still? The thing is, there's just nobody else, right? Like, there's not like some secret treasure trove of pitchers, you know, left and right pitchers that can throw 90.
It's too hard of a game. There aren't enough human beings, or the league is too big. There's just something going on where it's just too hard. There's not enough people that are good at it good enough to be as a league average or whatever pitcher. So yeah, but Martin Perez qualifies there, and the Blue Jays, you know, with the healthy righties here, should be able to bruise them up pretty good. I'll be very, very happy to play them on FanDuel again, in spite of last night's bad luck.
All right, yeah, before we get to the evening slate of games, tell us a little bit about Fantasy Factor.
Yeah, sure. Fantasy Factor is one of our longtime sponsors here on the show, and what Fantasy Factor offers is the traditional DFS experience, with a few big advantages. The first is that you're just not going to see big-time sharks putting in 100 lineups on Fantasy Factor. You know, they kind of stay away. It's smaller, a little bit more casual, lower buy-ins, just perfect for the people who want to put in a few bucks, you know, 5 to 25 each night, and play against weaker competition, which I think should be the goal of anyone who plays daily fantasy sports. And Fantasy Factor, what they also do really nicely is offer a bunch of free rolls. Every Friday and Saturday, they offer a free roll for people to come out, get to know the software, make a few bucks so they can play it and, you know, get to know the software a little bit better and maybe win some money that you can put back into play on the site or just cash out. So go to fantasyfactor.com, use promo code DFSR, you get a free $5 entry fee, and keep an eye on their Twitter and ours as well, because we'll be announcing their free rolls whenever they come around. So check them out and hope to see you over there.
The late slate of games, again, like the early slate, smaller one, only six games going on here, four in the 7 o'clock hour, and then two. Then we have to. There's a long wait, and then two on the West Coast at around 10 Eastern. Do you see this as sort of the same situation as what we had on the early, where there's just like kind of one clear? Well, do you see Severino as a clear guy here, or can you make cases for some of the other pitchers here? I guess I should probably phrase it that way.
Yeah, I think on FanDuel it's pretty straightforward, actually. The price is just really low. The 9,800 is super affordable for him. I mean, it's kind of odd to see him so much cheaper than he is on DraftKings, but, you know, I'll take what I can get. Totally fine by me. And the Angels this season have just been a good matchup for right-handed pitchers, too. So the combination of Severino being actually good, as opposed to good with asterisks, like some of these other guys going tonight, and with having a plus matchup on top of that, like, it's really all you can ask for. It's really hard to imagine playing anyone else in cash games on FanDuel.
Yeah, it's almost like a perfect, it's like the same exact thing as Martinez, right? Like,
it's very similar,
yeah. Very affordable on FanDuel. Get his price in there. On DraftKings, he's 12-3, and the next highest guy is 8,800 in Arrieta. So, are you, you know, $4,500 price decrease, or excuse me, $3,500 price decrease, from pitcher one to pitcher two, it's like just totally insane. It's probably correct. He's better than Arrieta. I'm not sure he's this much, but he's not sure he's that much better than him, all things considered. But we definitely have him for the most raw points on the slate. He's been excellent, striking out almost 10 per nine, limiting the walks. 3.15 xFIP through 81 innings is a real number, and it's not like he just came out of nowhere. Like, he was a real prospect. So I think you can pretty much trust it. I suspect when the dust settles, it'll be a situation where he'll be basically 100% play in cash game, not for everybody, for our system, in cash game on FanDuel, and on DraftKings it's going to be close. I do think it's probably closer for him to be in lineups than it is for Martinez on the early, simply because you don't have as many expensive bats on this late slate that you have, like, coming with Coors and some other places, mostly Coors, but on the early. After him, you know, either for starting pitcher two, or if you're just like looking to fully fade the price on DraftKings, where else can you look?
Well, yeah, that is going to ultimately be the question on DraftKings, I think. Like, do you want to pay up and get Severino and pair him with one of these lesser guys? My instinct tells me you probably do at this point. Severino, while he's expensive there, it's not so spread out that, like, right now I think he's a point off the optimal lineups. And as we get some other cheap bats come in, you know, random Dwight Smith types batting second on Toronto or whatever, we can see an uptick in our ability to play expensive guys. So I think I could actually see him coming in there. After that, you get a kind of a lot of these guys with question marks, and I'm curious to know who you like best. So the one who's coming up right now on the top of everything is Hyunjin Ryu, fourth-year pitcher from the Dodgers, who's had a track record of some pretty solid success, but, you know, of course, had a mid-season last year and has kind of struggled this year, at least when it comes to ERA, and the xFIP is higher as well. How are you feeling about Ryu coming off of last year's mid-season?
I mean, he's pretty unexciting, I think. Like, I get why the system likes him. He started as like a 190 favorite and has bet all the way down to minus 150. So his money line is heading in the exact wrong direction for what you want to see. Sure. Now, that being said, still a minus 150 money line for a guy who is in like the 7,000 price range in DraftKings is still completely acceptable. So it's not like, I mean, like, the 190 thing was just, it's always funny to look at those things and say it's heading the wrong direction. It's like a house that was priced too high to begin with. Like, you were never going to get $500,000 for that house. It sold for $350,000. Like, you made a mistake with the original price. It wasn't like it was worth it and no one paid it. Like, you just made the mistake from the beginning. So, like, I do caution a little bit when you see that kind of movement, because it can dissuade you. And I know I just said it, but it was just because the mistake was there to begin with. Minus 150 at 7,000. for a guy who strikes out, you know, more than eight per nine against and facing a Mets team, which is not a lot of their power ish kind of comes from the left hand side of the plate, minus like Cespedes, and I know Flores kind of rakes lefties, but I think I'm just totally fine with the price on him just because he just is cheap. He's like, not exciting by any means, and he's not a great pitcher. And if he was 9,000, we wouldn't even be having the discussion. That's kind of where I fall with him. It's like it's only because he's so cheap that I think he's interesting. There's not. The superlatives are just that he's like a pretty good, not great.
Yeah, Hyunjin Ryu not going to call Doug to write his next cover letter for his next job. Yeah, I think all your points about Ryu are pretty solid. I mean, the thing with Ryu, he's 30 years old, so that's not young in terms of starting pitchers, but also he's really just been plagued by that home run to fly ball rate this year. I just feel like if it comes back down around, like he's a guy we were comfortable playing at prices significantly higher than this a couple of years ago. And while it's very unpredictable, I actually said it was one lost season. It was effectively two lost seasons. He missed 2015 altogether and only pitched 30 total innings across multiple levels in 2016. So, you know, it's a very good chance he's just kind of like turned into this worst version of himself. That wouldn't surprise me at all, particularly when it comes to control, because especially after Tommy John surgery, things like that, it's oftentimes the control that has the greatest difficulty coming back as opposed to the velocity. So I get the criticisms of Ryu. It's just you can't criticize him without comparing him to the other guys you're kind of picking between. So who do you like if you wind up fading Ryu?
Well, one guy I just can't get my brain wrapped around is Arrieta. So right. Arrieta, like, his first basically... Well, since he joined the Cubs, let's wipe the Orioles years kind of off the map because he really didn't become anything till he got traded to the Cubs. His first three seasons with the Cubs were like he's striking out more than a batter an inning. The ERA is really damn low, and so is the xFIP. But also the BABIP is like insanely low. Like so, his first three seasons with the Cubs, his BABIP against was 270, 240, 240. Right, and so you're like, well, is he just like this total BABIP kind of outlier guy that like, cause that was actually over like, I don't know, 500 innings. So it wasn't just like some small sample size. It gets like I'm kind of making these numbers up, but it's basically, I would say around a 250 against BABIP over 500 innings. Now this season, he's striking out 10 batters per nine. His walks are under three, which is probably fine for him, all sure. things considered. The BABIP's up to 320, which is maybe a little high, but not like crazy. It's high for him, but not crazy high, just like in general for like pitchers. And I don't know, just like your average pitcher.
It's pretty high.
It is, but it's not crazy. It's not like 400, whatever. And then the ERA is 4.64. The xFIP's 3.76. All these numbers. Basically, what I'm saying is, he seems like a really, like still like a really good pitcher who might just be running like really bad right now. And if you think that's the case, and you're going to get, for at least on DraftKings, for what was it, 8,800, a guy that can strike out 10 batters per nine and has like kind of run bad a little bit. Like he hasn't made it through the fifth inning in his last two games. And that a lot of that is like BABIP and strand rate stuff. I don't know. I think he has, and I know Miami doesn't strike out a ton, but his profile strikes me as a guy who you could really blow it out of the box with, like price wise, just because a 10 strikeout per nine guy at 8,000 is like insane deal to me. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, it all makes perfect sense. I think it's really hard to figure out what Arrieta's like true talent is when it comes to a lot of these different things too, because oddly his BABIP has climbed as his ground ball rate has lowered, which is just the total opposite of what would normally happen here. So I think it's very easy to look at the 77 innings this season and all of these other numbers that have come with it and say, well, hey, you know, it's just kind of a small sample size issue. You know, you look back at his time with Baltimore, which maybe it would be a reasonable proxy for kind of his true talent. Because his career BABIP allowed, by the way, is 270. I think we can safely say after 1,070 innings in the majors, that's probably around where it should normalize. And a BABIP 50 points higher than your career normal levels can be nothing else except for bad luck. I mean, that's pretty much what that has to be. The home run rate also has just doubled from last season too. And, you know, is up by 0.6 per nine over his career level. So there's a lot of run bad here in Arrieta. And I think I'm with you there. I do think, I wonder how bad stretches like this do influence underlying projections sometimes, because fundamentally it doesn't really look like a lot has changed, except if you say, because the thing is about sample sizes in particular, people like to say, well, that's a significant sample size, so now we can trust it. But the thing about outliers and the way statistical sample sizes work is that somebody has to be the luckiest one, right? Like, it doesn't, you don't, it's hard to know who it is necessarily, but there's some chance that a guy like Arrieta, I remember Ricky Nolasco comes to mind here as another guy who just kept performing very differently from his peripherals. It's like, well, somebody has to be the luckiest guy, somebody has to be the unluckiest guy, and their chances are good. There was somebody who could have been a great major league pitcher who never wound up getting a shot simply because he had bad BABIP luck, right? Now, if Arrieta was just getting by on the back of a BABIP that doesn't, like, the rest of his profile doesn't really support a BABIP that low, from my perspective. But if there he just generates weak contact, whatever it is that he does, you know, creates worse hits off the bat, then who knows? Maybe we're set to see a renaissance for him. I will say that with Arrieta, this is a very long way to discuss a guy who probably is just underpriced. Like, the 8,800 is probably too cheap, even if he is just the exact guy he is now, and you just take the BABIP at face value. Likewise on FanDuel, I think he's very affordably priced at 9,500. The problem there is that we only need one pitcher, and Severino's 9,800. So right. We're not going to go in that direction. But yeah, for big tournaments, pitcher two on DraftKings, all that seems totally in play to me.
No, I think I don't know. I feel like we did a long-winded way of talking myself into it. Maybe, more for DraftKings. I think you take advantage of the price inefficiencies. All right, before we get out of here, let's just talk about a couple of quick teams that we can target on the offensive side of things. I mean, do you see the Yankees again coming in with a pretty high run line? That's been sort of the case for them over the short term. They've been dealt some pretty good matchups, and they've just been a pretty good offensive team. The overall run lines are not nearly as high as they are on the early slate, where you have the game in cores and you just have the Toronto guys. Do you see the Yankees as like a cut above the rest, or is there another team that kind of stands out to you?
I like the Yankees against Jesse Chavez, beating a dead horse now, because we've talked about the Yankees for multiple days in a row here, but best WBA in the majors against right-handed pitching. Jesse Chavez, absolutely nothing special at all. Getting him out of Anaheim isn't going to help matters. The K per nine is under 7. Pretty high fly ball rate as well. Chavez is running pretty hot on batting average on balls and played this season, and he still has a 4.85 ERA, so just all signs point to this being just a slugfest for the Yankees. The thing about Chavez as well is that he's always been bruised up by the fly ball, and the home run in particular, averaging almost 2 home runs per 9 this season. Yeah, I think the Yankees are in a phenomenal spot, and just a higher floor spot than usual as well, just because of Chavez's profile of low strikeouts and high home runs. So,
it's hard
to imagine not just building all my lineups around the Yankees.
Judge a little expensive, but the rest of the top of that order, Gardner, Hicks, Holiday, kind of Castro, but not really. And then Gary Sanchez. Mostly Sanchez comes in there mostly because it's very difficult to find offensive first catchers, and he's just one of the few ones that just is elite with the bat. Like, he's like sort of like where Buster Posey was for a while. It's like, well, there's him, and then there's everyone else who kind of stinks. Do you want to pay all the way up for the guy that's way better than almost everyone else at his position? I think most of the times it's probably pretty, especially for a night where you don't have to pay a ton for pitching on FanDuel, it's mostly correct to just grab the best guy. Indians, another team in a good spot here against Wade Miley. Just the top of that order, Lindor, Kipnis, I don't know if he'll hit second. Sometimes they kind of move Robertson up into the two hole when they face lefties. So if you get a situation like that with him, then I think that would be a fantastic punt play if you got him at, like, you know, near the minimums hitting second in that lineup. I'm not positive they'll do it that way. Indians in a good spot as well. Any other team that kind of jumps out to you here before we get out?
One thing I want to highlight about the Indians as well, very patient team, top 10 walk rate, one of the hardest teams to strike out. I think they are maybe the hardest team to strike out, yeah, versus left-handed pitching this season. So just a terrific approach by the whole team there. And Wade Miley this season has been horrendous at not walking guys. 5 walks per 9 this year. It's a career high, but he's always had kind of control issues, so that's not too much of an outlier. I really, really like that Indian spot. I think there's a good chance Miley doesn't make it out of like the 4th inning. As far as just kind of picking and choosing from around the rest of the league, I think there's actually a lot of pretty interesting spots, but it's more on like the pick and choose your batter sort of situation. I like any of the right-handed Chicago bats against Jeff Locke. Locke is kind of like a new age Wade Miley, just kind of a similar profile of a guy, not going to really strike anyone out. Big potential for home runs even in Miami, which is not the greatest hitter's park, but I think you still kind of take what you can get there. And then another game to keep an eye on is that Detroit-Seattle game. Yeah, it's in Seattle once again, but with Daniel Norris and a pitcher yet to be named for Seattle, I think that could be a very interesting spot. So keep an eye on whoever winds up pitching for Seattle. But yeah, right now that game almost touching a 10 total, and that's before we even know who the Seattle managers are going to trot out there.
I'm seeing someone named Andrew Moore who's not available on either. All right, we're going to get out of here. Really nice double slate of baseball today. Like the kind of the way, or at least early on, how things are shaking out for both the early and the late. DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system, optimal lineups, FanDuel, and DraftKings. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month. After that, you're all good to go. Buddy, back again tomorrow talking full day Friday in baseball.
Back at it again tomorrow with more baseball.